one of the dilemmas we're dealing with. One is making sure that that schedule and information gets to the board subcommittee, but then also one of the downsides we're facing that we're going to cure is keeping the rest of the board fully informed. And so we worked on that. I'm going to issue a memo shortly. It'll go in the public record, trying to resolve those problems. If anyone determines it's not resolved from their standpoint, let me know, and I'll go back to the drawing board and find a way to make it work. Any other ex-party communications? Okay, with that, we'll call the State Board liaison, Stephen Moore, who let down his guard and showed how much he's into restoration recently at the QCC meeting.
Thank you. Thank you, board members, and staff, and folks from the Wairika area. My name is Stephen Moore. I'm a member of the State Water Resources Control Board and the liaison to the beautiful North Coast region. As always, when I do my reports to the regional board, I organize according to first budget issues, and then I'll discuss some recent activities that have been that we've been involved in, and then upcoming activities that may be of interest to the region, and then finally go over some legislation. And so, you know, on all these counts, it's been an extraordinary year in the world of water, and I'll talk about drought issues as well. First off, I want to talk about budget. On September 23rd, we had a long hearing where we adopted updated fees for the different permitting programs that are necessary to support our existing programs, maintain fiscally prudent reserves, and accommodate some pay raises, as well as pay for new authorized positions that we've talked about this year. For example, fees in the 401 certification program for dredge or fill wetlands or waters, those fees were increased by an average of 19.7%, or almost 20%, to pay for these new positions, which were recommended by a third-party audit of the 401 program in 2013. So I also point out, though, that the fee program for 401 certification has been changed from a larger one-time application fee to a fee of lower increments, which includes an application fee and an annual fee and a post-project monitoring fee. So it's been broken down to encourage getting the work done as soon as possible. Also, it's not a one-size-fits-all for ecological restoration projects, that thing we talked about at WQCC. That's an example where we have reduced fees compared to other dredge and fill projects to try to create at least some positive incentive to do restoration in wetlands and riparian areas. You know, it was a very difficult hearing. The fees went up the most for the dairies at about 33%, and in part due to last year's suspension of half of their fee increase because of economic issues. And with their high water quality threat and complexity and the scale of this program, it turns out that less sites require relatively more staff. But we heard concerns from dairies around the state, and notably here in the North Coast region, who began their program with no fees, as you well know. And so it's hard on the dairies with the economic conditions as they are. Some fees did go down proportionally due to staffing requirements, including for the MPDES point source permits. Fees went down 3.2%, and the stormwater permits went down 8.9%. So just to give you a flavor for how pleasant these fee hearings can be, I'll note that not a single party attended the hours-long hearing to support these fee decreases. The fees for the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program were not changed. The WDR permit fees went up by about 7.9%, which is very difficult for many stakeholders. During these hearings, the agricultural interests repeatedly asked for greater general fund support for their programs, pointing to, you know, the improved state fiscal health. And, you know, as the state board members, we indicated it's not in our authority to influence the budgeting structure. It's really up to the legislature. But we committed ourselves to a process that would improve our stakeholder outreach this year to give earlier warning where we're allowed to, because there's a lot of confidentiality in the governor's office about these type of things. If there's any budget shortfalls that we anticipate, we can give this information to representatives that want to work with the legislature to change the funding of our program toward more general funding. You know, we can provide that information, but we can't decide how much general fund is used to support our staff and contracts. So that's where we are. I think this process moving forward, and we'll have a report in our executive director's report in December, it'll help answer questions of where the fees go in terms of staff effort and any contracts. And it's always been our aim to align our programs with the resources we receive and report that in a transparent manner. So our annual performance reports on our website reflect this commitment to the people that pay for our programs and in our efforts in resource alignment. So we take this very seriously, and we also know there's a customer service component that your staff here at the region takes very seriously. So that's on budget. Now, recent activities, yeah, you could say it was drought, and more drought in some ways. I know a lot of regional board are diverting some staff from the traditional programs to help communities in need to create regulatory streamlining and other efforts to get emergency water or even food, to different communities. I participate in the Drought Task Force. There's a little booklet that we hand out when we go around the state in terms of some information that may be helpful to folks that are suffering due to the drought and different assistance programs. So not just, the water rights side that I'll talk about a little bit, but also for health and safety and food needs and everything. It's been a historic drought. And you heard about it, the Water Quality Coordinating Committee, where all the regional boards gathered with the state board last week. Board Chair Felicia Marcus gave a comprehensive overview of how all sectors of our state are affected. In the agricultural sector, over 400,000 acres have been fallowed, and I know folks up here are affected. We've got communities that are running out of drinking water, and up here we've use the tools we have at the state board. It's called a temporary urgency change petition. I probably talked about this back in June. It's one of the tools that we use when under extraordinary circumstances and lack of water availability, we can make short-term temporary changes to water permits and licenses to change things like the point of diversion, the place of use, the quantity that's bypassed to protect fish and wildlife, all these different terms of existing water rights permits. So, an example in this, well, several examples in this region, but earlier in this year, it was about June 1st time frame, or June 17th, our deputy director of water rights approved temporary urgency change position for the city of Montague, which changed the point of diversion. It allows a place of use at the city, and our multiple divisions, water rights, water quality, as well as the folks in drinking water division, worked on this and conditioned these on temperature and using pre-14 or groundwater well to augment the river flow. And so this took a concerted effort of many parties to make that project happen. And that's one example. So you may have heard under the governor's drought proclamation, emergency authorities were granted to the state water board to adopt regulations. And there were kind of two areas. One was in curtailments of water rights. And that's where in a given watershed, we look at what's reported in terms of water demand. And we look at Department of Water Resources real-time information on flows in the watershed, and we do the math, and where the demand exceeds supply, we issue curtailments based on priority of water right in time. So senior water rights maintain their water rights, and the junior water rights are curtailed. And this had to occur in several watersheds this year, Sacramento, San Joaquin, but here in the North Coast, the Russian River. I think the priority date was in the 50s, 1953 or 4, in the Eel River, and in the Scott River. The state of the Scott River is such that even without the drought, or if it had not been as severe, there was still a lack of available water to meet all the demands of all the water rights. So the curtailments would have happened anyway. So that was one aspect. By issuing those curtailments under emergency regulation, it gives us the ability to enforce the curtailments more on a real-time basis so that the senior water rights holders that need them this summer or this fall can get them without an extended hearing process under our traditional water rights authority. So that was the need that was met by having these curtailments. And only post-1914 water right holders were curtailed under the regulation. The other aspect that we covered in emergency regulation were the urban conservation regulations. And that was where it was proclaimed as of July 29th that in the state of California, it's unlawful to use water to wash your sidewalks and driveways, to wash your car without a shutoff nozzle, to have a fountain running with potable water that doesn't recirculate, and these type of requirements. Also, it required all the water purveyors, over 3,000 connections, which total in the state of California is 414 agencies, or retail agency. So we got 58 counties, we got 414 water agencies, over 3,000 connections. We actually have about 3,000 systems total in the state. So of these 414 water agencies, they're required to implement mandatory outdoor use restrictions that are within their existing urban water management plans. So we actually, the regulation says, do what you said you were going to do in a drought. So it's not really an overly onerous expectation. And part of the agreement here is then we get monthly reporting. Instead of annual reports to our Division of Drinking Water, we get a more granular reporting on a monthly basis on water use. And turns out that I should have mentioned, yes, as of July 1st, you know, the drinking water department over in the Department of Public Health moved to the State Water Board. So I like to refer to us as the new improved State Water Board, because we have now a Division of Drinking Water, and the Safe Drinking Water Clean financing programs have been brought into the State Water Board so that we can manage water more mindfully from source to the tap. And this has been useful during this drought response because we've just been more nimble and able to respond to emergency drinking water conditions using the authorities under the Drinking Water Division to help communities, which are a little more administrative and efficient than our traditional water rights authorities, where we would have to hold hearings. Still a very important process, but in the case of emergency, it's hard to be as responsive as we need to. So it's been really helpful. So getting back to our Division of Drinking Water in the drought. So one of the staff people, a guy named Mark Emerson, he also happens to be an elected board member of the Carmichael Water District near Sacramento. But he works. He used to work for the Department of Public Health. Now he works Division of Drinking Water, and he's really good at doing web-based reporting tools. And so he came up with a reporting portal that all these 400-odd agencies use to report this use. And it's very efficient. It's on our website now in terms of July and August data. You can look at all 414 agencies and their water production to get a sense of, in your area, you know, what water agencies and their customers have shown, what kind of water savings relative comparing 2014 to 2013. So that's always a challenge for the governmental agencies, is to, you know, get the data in a real-time situation and report it back so the public can see it. And so Mark Emerson happened to be one of those you know, shining stars within our agency that was really talented and was able to pull this off. And so we're real proud of that. And proud of the fact that, yes, you know, these data are available now for anybody who wants to look at them on waterboards.ca.gov. So the news, you know, the punchline is, yes, you know, the state of California on the whole has saved water relative to last year, which was also a drought year. We were mindful then. But comparing July from this year to last year, we had a 7.5% reduction in water use. And then comparing August after the emergency regs went into play and all the press, it went up from 7.5 to 11.5% comparing August to August. So it's a trajectory on the right track. I think one useful comparison in terms of water quantity that we're saving, you look at, I mentioned the temporary urgency change petition process. So in the Delta watershed, the big Central Valley, right? Because of this process, we held back water. We relaxed fish and wildlife standards to a point the fishery agencies could be comfortable with to save water in the reservoirs to keep the temperatures lower. The amount of water that was saved through that process was 400,000 acre feet. So keep that, it was 400,000 acre feet. And it's still being used to keep delta salinity managed and to keep things just barely cool enough. We're almost, it's a daily challenge right now. You know, we're waiting for the weather to cool down. Everyone is. So that's 400,000 acre feet that were saved through those measures. Well, the urban customers of our state, if you add up June, July, and August, saved about 160,000 acre feet compared to previous year. So if this continues in September or October, the urban customers, you know, everybody in, you know, using water in their houses and their landscaping, have saved about as much as the projects did in terms of holding back water to try to get us through this drought. So it all adds up to hopefully about 1 million acre feet. Which is nothing to shake a stick at, you know. And so I think it's a testament to everyone taking this seriously, working together. We can still do better, as we say, you know. But it's up to the local water agencies, our partners, to get the word out. And we have in partnership with the Association of California Water Agencies, AQUA. They work with DWR, our sister agency, and we have a user-friendly website called saveourwater.com, saveourwater.com, or saveourh2o.org. But that's been designed for all citizens to be able to use as a resource to figure out ways we can each individually save water. Did I mention saveourwater.com? So it's, instead of just saying save water, here's some ideas. Okay, so it's taken up a lot of our energy and time, but there have been some, by having drinking water in our agency, we're involved in some of the emergency response. And here in this region, for emergency drinking water, we recently provided bottled water for the Yurok tribe of about $32,000. And there's a lot of communities in the Central Valley and the Central Coast that we're also providing emergency bottled water for. Okay. So, moving to upcoming activities. Let's see, one more thing. Well, you know, this may seem a little mundane, but whenever the state board issues a statewide permit, I think considered a small victory because we were just talking about fees going up. Part of the ways we can keep fees down and be more efficient at staff level is when the state board issues general permits, and then the individual regions don't have to issue either general or specific permits. So it makes us more efficient. So last week we adopted a revised general statewide waste discharge requirements for small domestic wastewater systems. And the accompanying CEQA negative declaration. So the order that was updated was order 97-10, so that was 14 years ago. and changes to the general order addressed some clarification on consistency with the on-site wastewater treatment system policy that we adopted in June and you've adopted into your basin plan. But as well as our recycled water policy, the Title 22 recycled water requirements, and an evaluation process in this general order to determine the need for nitrogen effluent limits for discharges above 20,000 gallons per day. Now also this general order for small wastewater domestic systems to land, right, because it's a WDR, so it's not an MPDES permit. We raised the ceiling from 20,000 gallons per day up to 100,000 gallons per day flow, which is 0.1 MGD. So this is intended to streamline permitting processes for small to medium-sized communities around the state. So as I mentioned, we hope this type of action can help offset staff needs for permitting. Now, upcoming activities, we are doing another statewide order in October 21st and then adoption in November 4th, if it goes according to plan, of a drinking water discharge permit. So the same folks who have been reporting on our reporting tool on monthly production of water use, those agencies are going to enroll, hopefully, in a general permit for discharges of drinking water from systems. They say, well, wait, why do we need permits for drinking water? And that has to do with the fact that when drinking water agencies do well development or maintenance, they deal with their water transmission line maintenance, treatment and distribution facilities, and as well as water main breaks, they can affect water quality and beneficial uses with chlorine, chloramine, excessive flow rates causing erosion, sedimentation. And so by having a best management practice approach, we hope to improve prevention of problems associated with drinking water discharges. And also we're trying to encourage reuse of this precious water where appropriate. And so that permit is queued up and hopefully will be adopted in the next few weeks. As far as upcoming activities here in the region, with the Klamath River settlement efforts, I think you know this, but I think it's worth repeating. The State Water Board, we support these collaborative efforts. We're supportive of the legislative strategy that we've been briefed on. But we want to state that, we do have the water quality certification process. It's no longer in abeyance. And so while we hope for the best for these type of solutions, we at the State Water Board still have to have a plan B. And so we'll hope for the best, but in 2015, you can expect the State Water Board to begin work toward the water quality certification if these legislative strategies are not fruitful. And finally, forgive my paper shuffling, there's just so much going on here. So have you noticed it's been kind of a busy legislative year for water? I don't know. According to our executive director, Tom Howard, he basically made a statement in an email to us saying, we're probably never going to see this much activity on water again in our lifetimes, because he certainly hasn't seen it in his. And that's somebody who's been around for a long time. There were 45 chaptered bills, 45 chaptered bills that related to water this year. So number one, no, just kidding. I'm not going to do all 45. Let's just say I'm going to try to hit the really high points, right? There were 3 vetoed bills. They weren't that controversial. There was one, AB 904, and I'm not sure how much you all have been plugged in, but Assemblymember Chesbro, forest practices and the concept of working forest management plans. I'm not sure if this rings a bell, but it establishes a new timber harvesting permit known as a working forest management plan for forest landowners with parcels less than 15,000 acres who are not primarily engaged in timber manufacturing activities. So it will allow timber harvesting in perpetuity without the need for subsequent permits. And under this working forest management plan, forest landowners would commit to a long-term objective of uneven aged forest management as opposed to the even aged management or clear cutting, and will be required to comply with various requirements designed to protect water quality and wildlife habitat. And it does have a carve out for the southern sub-district of the Coast Forest District, which I'm not aware of where that's at, but it doesn't apply to them.
Santa Cruz.
Okay, there you go. Thank you. Let's see. I'll get to groundwater at the end. I want to point this out. This is a big victory, SB 445, from Senator Hill. This is on our underground storage tank program. These were changes that we've been asking for years, and it was one of those years where the legislature said, what do you need? And we were able to make these changes that will really help citizens of California and our program for underground storage tanks. It makes significant changes, including extending the program's sunset date by 10 years and increasing the fee assessed on petroleum stored in underground storage tanks from 0.014 per gallon up to 0.020 per gallon. Dedicates 3 mils of the assessed fee, which is 0.3%, for cleaning up contaminated sites without regard to the source of the contamination, particularly where there's no viable responsible parties, and for helping small businesses comply with the underground storage tank regulatory requirements. And also, we're very happy to say that all single-walled underground storage tanks have to be permanently closed by December 31st, 2025. And then this gives us authority with the necessary authority to prevent fraud in the cleanup fund. So this is a big, a big victory for our underground storage tank program and all the regional boards and for the citizens. Well, let's talk groundwater. So I probably briefed you on a concept paper that we authored at the State Water Board, and it came out of discussions at the WQCC among all the regional boards starting in 2011. And the State Water Board staff, the same folks who do the statewide programs on urban conservation efficiency, they worked on this groundwater strategic work plan. We were looking at the fact that, in places in the state we're having subsidence, we're having infrastructure issues with groundwater overpumping, very serious. So it's not just quality issues we're concerned with, but quantity. And to try to be constructive in this statewide dialogue and not, create fear or concern, we generated a 10-page concept paper in October of 2013, where we laid out rationally, what would a local regional groundwater basin management structure look like? What's the minimum program needed for sustainable groundwater management? At that time, in October, I would never have predicted that this legislation would have gone through. The governor, on September 16th, signed the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. It was composed of three bills, two Senate bills and an Assembly bill, by Assemblymember Dickinson and Senator Pavley. And a lot of the principles of our concept paper and some other principles came forward in this bill. So we're happy to be involved in it and to emphasize the importance of local groundwater basin management. And at every turn, whether it was in the governor's office hearings that I participated in, or briefing the legislature, it was always, we need to structure groundwater management as a locally controlled system. If the local jurisdiction is unable to or unwilling to do some basic management of the basin, then as a backstop, the state can come in and manage it for a temporary period until the locals get on their feet and have the program meeting basic requirements. So those principles are carried forward in the three bills, but also just really not engaging the State Water Board, right at the beginning, but setting the groundwork for the technical basis of moving forward. So I'm going to see if I can find my cheat sheet here. On some highlights. Basically, the Department of Water Resources is really our technical arm, right? And the State Water Board, we have technical expertise, but we play a more regulatory and funding role. The Department of Water Resources is charged to develop priority basins here in the beginning of 2015. And then set up in 2016 the approach, the criteria for which groundwater basin boundaries can be modified. Currently, Bulletin 118 has groundwater basins defined, but often they may have geopolitical boundaries, maybe not the best defensible technical boundaries. That might not be as prevalent in the North Coast, but certainly in the Central Valley. And so that's 2016. And also, during 2016, the Department of Water Resources will develop the regulations that define what the minimum sustainable groundwater management plan looks like. So it'll take into account thresholds for sustainable management, because obviously during drought, we always draw down groundwater. That's our drought water supply in this state, and it's appropriate. But we want to encourage locals to define what the lowest limit is so that it becomes a sustainable yield system and it doesn't have overly extraordinary impacts on surface water resources. So that's in the 2016 time frame. By June 30th, 2017, that's an important date because at that time, all of the groundwater basins in the state will need to have an entity that manages, that governs that basin. It can be a group of basins. It certainly should be existing entities that can gather with others and form joint powers authorities or other memoranda for governance. But these arrangements have to be in place by June 30th, 2017 in the state of California, now that we've joined the other 49 states in regulating groundwater quality, quantity. So that's an important date because if at that point an entity is not formed, that's when the State Water Board can step in and assume responsibility to manage the basin. Now, to put folks a little at ease, I hope, I wanted to repeat what Senator Pavley said about the state stepping in when she was talking to her colleagues, including assembly members and senators that represent this part of the state. She said, it's not unlike when a school district is having trouble, is failing fiscally, and the state steps in. The state comes in, helps get the fiscal house in order, and gets out. And that's exactly what we would do. You know, we're not interested in taking over groundwater basin management on a statewide level. It's not the best way to go. But we are interested in helping, assisting locals to get sustainable groundwater management underway. So it would be a temporary role. And so another key date is by the year 2020. So I mentioned 2017, June 30th, 2020, is when those basins that are in overdraft conditions as defined by Department of Water Resources must have an acceptable groundwater, sustainable groundwater management plan. And they can refer basins with unacceptable plans to the State Water Board as probationary basins. So that's another place where the State Water Board could have a role. And then for non-overdraft basins, there's a date, June 30th, 2022. So you got the 2017, 2020, and then 2022. We do have, I forget, 10 or 12 staff that have been hired or moved over into a division for groundwater sustainability. So we're not going to wait around until 2017 to work with folks and work with the regional boards in terms of where you think our efforts would be best spent to assist locals to get sustainable groundwater basin management underway. If the drought continues, this will become more of an acute issue statewide. And so we encourage you your staff and you to communicate with us as to where we can use these existing resources to help the locals better manage their basins, because we all depend on it. We're all in this together, and we want to play that role of support and customer service so that we have a success story in all parts of our state. I appreciate the time today. All right. Thank you.
Any board member questions or comments?
Excuse me, Mr. Moore. How many, have we identified all of the groundwater basins in the state, or has DWR?
Yeah, we're in a good starting point with Bulletin 118. That's the early 80s documentation, but you know, there's sort of a unanimous call from all parts of the state to have that updated based on GIS tools and further investigative work. Groundwater is so difficult because it's out of sight, out of mind, and it requires technical expertise to really define these three-dimensional basins.
Have we got any kind of an idea of how many we're looking at?
I wish I had.
I can answer that, actually. Yeah, I was just reading it this morning. Between defined basins and their sub-basins, there are 515 in the state, and that underlies roughly 40% of the state's area.
Very good.
So we got 60% of the state that doesn't have defined groundwater basins under, and there may not be a groundwater basin, say, under portions of the Sierra Nevada.
Which is interesting, because that's kind of one of those areas that Bulletin 118 doesn't cover, and yet many communities depend on those wells that are in fractured bedrock,
right,
but aren't defined under the DWR.
Well, because it doesn't technically meet the definition of a groundwater basin.
Exactly, yep. And so that's one of those areas that's going to have to be addressed through this renewed effort to define groundwater in the state.
Okay. Any other board member comments or questions? I just had a couple of comments. First, in regard to restoration, I've had longstanding and strong support for having the reduced fees, and so I appreciate whatever efforts that you've been able to accomplish on that. I wanted to comment that I think looking at it over a 40-year history, right now the state board is listening more to the regional boards than they ever have. But that's going to change a little bit our relationship, and I haven't sorted this out, but I think it will result in faster innovation at the state board level, and they will be making statewide policies that take into account a little bit the diversity of California and the different regional boards at a faster rate than ever before. And that's a tremendous thing. It will mean it's more our staff liaisoning with state board staff and then actually through the regional board. And I'm trying to think through the best way that we can adjust our format to it. And it may be that the regional board needs to give more direction to the EEO, to our staff, to the state board, as opposed to independently doing policies. I'm not quite sure. But I did want to thank the state board that it's the warmest and best relationship I've seen, like I said, since the Port of Colon Act was passed, and you deserve a compliment for that and how we managed to work with that. And then my heart goes out to you on the drought. It's real people, real lives, real suffering. Economic and personal loss of people, and having to play King Solomon and properly cut the baby in half is a very challenging task. And I was also encouraged that you were looking a little bit at Australia, where there was more than 1 year of the drought. So what are you going to do if the weather doesn't turn this year? And I think that's wise, and I realize that's even more pain that you have to allocate, but it's better to do it ahead of time than not have the water and have to allocate even more. So I appreciate the effort.
Thank you. Yeah, I think Australia, their lesson, you remember this from WQCC, was we wished we'd have really conserved starting in year three of the 13-year drought. And so we're trying to learn from their example. And I think it's an effort that goes statewide. It's just, we just happen to be on the state board. This is all Californians really toeing the line.
Any other questions? Well, thank you. We really appreciate your reports, both taking the time to attend, get to hear the different locals. I think that's very important for a statewide view.
You let us
know really what's happening in Sacramento, and that's always helpful.
Good. I look forward to hearing more today. Thank you.
It's super simple.
Okay, the next item is public forum, and I have